Welcome to Sounds from the Shells. I'm Mika.
I'm Sarah.
And I'm Lee.
And today we are joined by Patrick Herschel. Woohoo! Hello. He's the president of the Utah Library Association. Patrick, would you like to tell us more about yourself?
Sure. I've worked in libraries since 2003. I started out at the Marriott Library as a student, and then I've worked at the Salt Lake City Public Library for, gosh, since 2005, 18 years now.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So I love libraries. I love birds. More on that later. I love to read. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, we're so happy you're here with us, and we are going to talk about the Utah Library Association. So we picked the perfect person, the president. Yes.
Hot dog.
So what is the Utah Library Association?
Yeah. So Utah Library Association, it's a nonprofit that's focused on professional development, networking opportunities for librarians of all types in the state of Utah. Yeah. We've got kind of like a focus on putting on a conference each year that's coming up in May. I think we get to talk about that later too, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
When did ULA start?
So ULA was founded in 1912.
Whoa.
Yeah, it's well over 100 years old now. It was three librarians, two of whom worked at the Salt Lake City Public Library. So I feel like I've got kind of a connection. So that was Joanna Sprague and Julia Lynch. Joanna Sprague is the librarian for whom the Sprague branch is named after. It's in Salt Lake City in the Sugar House neighborhood. And she was like actually a super fascinating figure. I used to do the training for the Salt Lake City Public Library. So one time I went on a deep Joanna Sprague rabbit hole while I was like researching for like new staff orientation and like library history. So she was director for like 40 years. And what originally made me look her up is the Sprague branch was named after her while she was still director. And I was like, what type of person like names a building after themselves? Like, what's going on here? And so it turned out it was the library board named the library after her. And it was because she'd already been director for like 20 years. And they presumably thought she was retiring any day at that point. But then she went on to be director for like 18 more years. It was 38 years like total, like Queen Victoria or something like that.
Wow. That's not normal though, right?
No, that's a long time. And so she started working for the Salt Lake City Public Library when it was first founded in 1898. So she was there from the beginning. And then her assistant was Julia Lynch, who worked there that whole time that Joanna Sprague did. And then when Joanna finally retired in the 40s, she took over as director, and she was director for like 3 years before she retired because she was also super old at that point. I bet that was kind of disappointing, you know, waiting in the wings for like 40 years for your chance. And then it's like, okay, I can't do this anymore.
Sounds like a Netflix soap opera.
right? Sorry, I'm turning this into like Salt Lake City Public Library history instead of like ULA stuff. But yeah, I don't know. I think she's a super fascinating figure and kind of, you know, it seems like she was a really important figure in libraries to have founded the Utah Library Association. Apparently, she was also in like the Pacific Northwest Library Association, like responsible for founding that. And I don't know. I found her super fascinating. I did a bunch of like research on her. I ripped out her Utah Digital Libraries newspaper database and looked at that. And it was cool just like looking her up because like she's from the time when there's people put like social things in the newspaper. It would be like Joanna Sprague to depart for Norway via the Panama Canal. And so like I really felt like trippy. I kind of like knew her over time. I mean, there was even, I think the coolest thing for me is when I was the trainer, I was in the HR department and we were like cleaning out old files down in like the deep, deep basement. And there was all this stuff around like old employee like salary records. And we found, I mean, it looked like one of those like library like checkout cards, you know, that used to go in the back of the books. You'd tuck it in and it would get the date stamps. It was that, but it was with Joanna Sprague's salary on it. It was this is how they used to like file this information away. That's cool. I guess use what supplies you have on hand.
Right?
So who can be members of ULA?
So really anyone can be a member of ULA. So we definitely focus on library staff, you know, either whether you're working frontline staff or your support staff. But we've made some updates to how membership's going to work going forward. And we're adding a new category for people that are just supporters of libraries. Mm-hmm. So really anyone that's interested in it. We've got a special category for Friends of the Library, board members, trustees as well. So really anyone that's involved in any aspect of libraries, we try and have a space for them. We cater to, I'm going to say all types of library, but really most types of library. So we've got a section dedicated to public libraries, academic libraries, and special libraries. School libraries actually have their own organization, UELMA. They're, of course, welcome to participate in ULA, but most of them, if they can only choose one, they end up opting for the specialized one, UELMA.
Makes sense.
It's all about the budget.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, it's hard. Like, yeah. School librarians don't have a lot of time to participate in extra stuff. I know a lot of them, they usually only get one or two professional development days a year. Yeah. And so if they've got to, you know, if they've got to just have one or two days, it makes sense that they go to something that's going to be dedicated fully to school libraries rather than the ULA conference. It's going to be a little bit more general.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. Yeah.
As we mentioned, you're the current president of ULA.
Yeah.
But the president doesn't stay president for terribly long. Can you kind of explain the process
Sure.
of how you became president and how that works and the president's job?
Yeah. So it's an elected position. So all members of ULA can vote each year. We actually, the election just closed on Friday. I think it should be today or tomorrow. The results all get announced about who the new elected members are. But you're nominated to be president. You can self-nominate. I don't know how many people do. It's a lot. It's a lot to take on. But so you're nominated. There's an election. We always have at least two people that run for president. So you've got to win that election. And then, like you said, it is kind of a short thing, but it's long at the same time. I mean, it's short but long, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. So it's a 3-year commitment. The first year you're president-elect, which is really about kind of learning the ropes. You've got some kind of some lesser tasks. I don't want to call it lesser. It's still a lot of work. You got to do things like track the strategic plan and just kind of it's a good way to get a survey of how the organization works. The second year you're actually the president. That's where you're making decisions. You've got to appoint people to chair committees and that kind of thing. You're running all the board meetings. We have quarterly board meetings. And then the third year you're what's called past president. And that's where you're kind of there as institutional knowledge or kind of passing on what you've learned over that time to the next group of people coming in. And you also take care of some of those like essential functions. You've got to prepare the budget. You've got to prepare the next slate of candidates for the next election that comes up to kind of keep things running. I feel like it's a really good system. I mean, I'm 1 3/4 of a year into it, but it's been nice. It was nice that first year to have that opportunity to work with two people that have been through it for a couple of years to kind of see how it works and be able to give you support and advice and then stick around for that extra year to kind of mentor the next group of people coming through.
It's very cool. I think it's a great system.
Yeah.
Passing along that knowledge and kind of working your way into the position.
So I met with a group of other state association presidents earlier this year. I went to Chicago. ALA put a big get together, and I was talking with the president of the Delaware Library Association, and that is like a life sentence. That is a 7-year commitment.
Oh, wow.
Where I didn't get like all the steps that you go through, but each year you've got like a new responsibility. But I couldn't believe that. I mean, I've really enjoyed my time as president in general, but I couldn't imagine doing this for 7 years. That's a lot.
It is a lot.
So 3 years, that seems perfect. Mm-hmm. It's a good system. I just wanted to reinforce what you're saying. It's a good system.
Well, but also like you're not in the same position all 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
So as someone that usually changes positions every 3 to 4 years, that's kind of my jam. I feel like you learn everything in that time frame and then you can pass it on.
Yeah, for sure.
It's a good time frame. So we have the president. We have other positions. Can you talk about the different like elements and the breakdown, I guess, of ULA?
Sure.
Yeah.
So ULA, we've got a 14-member voting board. So these are the people that are actually going to vote on any major decisions that we have to make. And so three of those positions we've already gone over. There's the president-elect, the president, and the past president. Then you've got 6 members at large. That are elected and they serve a 3-year term. They're another part of the voting board. They also have some functions overseeing the strategic plan and on some of the kind of more essential committees that we have. And then after that, we've got our two chapter liaisons. We've got the ALA chapter liaison and the MPLA chapter liaison. And then we've got three section chairs. So there's the one dedicated to public libraries, the one dedicated to academic, and then the one dedicated to special. So that kind of makes up our voting board, and they've each kind of these different areas of specialization to make sure that there's communication happening, to make sure that we're doing a good job of catering to all the needs of all the different types of libraries that ULA serves. And so then beyond that, that's kind of what I think of as like the central part of the organization. But mm-hmm. we've also got these two other kind of big wings of the organization. There's our committees. And so committees, what they do is they kind of take care of all of the like essential functions of ULA, things that we know that year in and year out, we're going to need to make sure happen. So there's a person that's over conference planning. There's a person that's over program selection for what's going to happen at the conference. There's someone that's over our advocacy committee that's going to be working with local and state legislators. We've got an intellectual freedom committee chair. So kind of all these, I think you get the idea, these like really big kind of like essential core parts of the organization. And so those are all appointed positions. So as president, and when you come in, and one of the things that you're doing is making sure that you've got somebody for each of those roles. And then the other wing of the organization is the roundtables. And so roundtables are kind of more like interest groups. And so I look at them as kind of catering to different facets of librarianship. So there's something like the youth services roundtable that, you know, is going to cater to librarians that work with children's and teens. There's also things like copyright. There's the leadership and management group. And so I think these are one of the really great places to get started in ULA if you're looking for a place to dip your toes in, or even if you're not in Utah, like most state organizations are going to have something like this. ALA has things similar to that as well if you want to get involved at the national level. But it's a really great place to get involved because it's it kind of gives you like this immediate peer group of people that have similar interests or similar jobs to you. And one of the things I really love about it is it's a good way to be able to talk through, you know, kind of the challenges that you face in your current job and talk it through with someone that's got a little bit of perspective. They're outside the direct situation, but they might have similar experience that can help you there.
Yeah, I'm a chair-elect, I guess, this year going to be chair for the Diversity Services Roundtable. So Sarah was nominated for chair-elect for...
And I got an email today that I got it. Which is, it's not nerve-wracking at all. I haven't been stressing all afternoon.
Breaking news.
Yeah, wow. So I'll get to serve with Lee this next year and be the chair-elect. And then the 2025 year, I'll be the chair.
Yeah.
Which is woo-hoo, wild. Woo. Yeah.
I really wouldn't lose too much sleep over it.
Yeah.
Like, it's mostly kind of a fun thing, right? Mm-hmm. And it's an opportunity to, you know, like I said, just network with these different people that have similar interests to you.
See, I got out of it. I was nominated when Lee was nominated, but Lee got it. So.
Oh, was there a rivalry here?
No.
Is that
Karen decided to nominate both of us. So.
I didn't have anyone running against me. So I was like, well, unless everyone really hates me, I guess this is happening. But I figured at least for me, like, it's a good way to like get my toes into knowing ULA, like as someone who's worked in libraries for a long time, but is just getting ready to start being an actual like librarian, official librarian. I feel like it's a good way to get to know people and do all of that networking. So
yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah. It'll be fun.
Welcome.
Thank you.
To ULA. Yeah.
So with all the, we're just going to like switch topics real quick. With all the buzz about banning books, can you talk about ULA's stance on the issues? I know it's a very divisive topic right now.
For sure. No, it's been in the news a lot. That's kind of how I started off my year as president, actually. Within the first week of when I took over as president, I got contacted by reporters, honestly, from all over the world about how the Bible had been removed from Davis County schools. So that was part of some legislation that was passed that set this really strict threshold that said schools had to remove books if it met any of these criteria for inappropriate or sexual content. So ULA's stance on the matter is we think all libraries should have a collection development policy that's going to dictate what type of materials a library should have in its collection. They should have a challenge process where members of their community can bring up concerns they have if they think something doesn't meet that collection development process. And then a panel of librarians from that library should review those materials and decide if it does or does not meet those criteria. We're not supporting any sort of outside legislation that's happening around this that's affecting librarians' ability to use the skills they gain as professionals, right? Like, librarians have master's degrees. They go to school for a long time to make sure that they're selecting materials that are appropriate for their communities. And these are people that live and work in their communities, and who knows those communities better than the librarians does? So we find it really inappropriate when this is getting dictated at a legislative level, especially where it's coming. A lot of these were seen at this kind of statewide level. There's a bill that's was just passed this last legislative session. It hasn't been signed into law yet, but that's probably coming soon. House Bill 29, and it sets a threshold. If a book is removed from 3 different school districts around the state, it's going to be required to be removed from all school districts across the state. We worked with the sponsoring legislators to try and get that changed. There was a slight amendment that happened that's going to be that we'll go to the state school board first. They'll have an opportunity to save that book. But we think functionally it's going to end up being the same thing, where it's probably there's going to be a lot of books pulled from school libraries. I went kind of on a long walk to answer your question. I guess my stance is really that's a decision that should be made at libraries by librarians.
We also agree with that.
Yes.
I would say.
Yes.
Glad to hear it. Yeah. Yes. And I feel like it's a difficult time to be a librarian right now, right? There's a lot of pressure that's on. It's can be very stressful. I don't know if you've seen this in your library system, but there's a lot of people just bring lists of books that are kind of put together. Clearly, groups online are generating these lists of books of things that they want to target. And so rather than participating in the book challenge process the way it was intended, where it's somebody reads a book and they find something that's like, whoa, I don't think that this is quite right. And they share that book with a librarian and talk about why they don't think it's appropriate for that library's collection. These are often books that people haven't read. They've just got it like on somebody else's suggestion that this book might not be appropriate. And then they just send it into the library and try and get these, you know, a group of 100 books removed all at once.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. There was one time when I was working at Magna, a patron came in and she had a graphic novel with her, and we had it in our juvenile section. Mm-hmm. And she said, I don't feel like this is appropriate for 12-year-olds. Can y'all look over it and, you know, maybe put it into teen?
Mm-hmm.
And we're like, yeah, sure. And we did. And we actually have a committee that looks over everything. And it was decided that, yes, we moved it into the teen, the young adult, because it was just above the emotional level content, maybe for like a 10 to 12-year-old. But like, it's so easy. You know what I mean? Like, instead of coming in with these lists of books that you've never read, probably never heard of, probably can't pronounce the names of the authors. Sure. And it's just, it's just sad.
It is. It's like the dictionary definition of censorship, right?
Yeah.
Just one person deciding that nobody else can have this thing because they don't like it or they find it dangerous in some way.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's always hard to walk that line of like, what doesn't fit in on our community at all?
Mm-hmm.
And what do we need to include? Because there are members of our community that benefit from us having it, even if it's not for everyone in the community.
For sure. I mean, that's what a library collection is about, right? Balancing the needs of everyone in the community. I guarantee there are plenty of books on the shelves in libraries that I don't love. It's not one that I particularly want to read, but that doesn't mean I think that no one should have the ability to read that. I mean, that's something that I always really try and impress upon people. Like, I really encourage everyone, like, think of like a book that's really important to you. Think of a book that's really meaningful to you. I guarantee that there's somebody out there that thinks that book shouldn't be in a library. And how would that make you feel if that book got taken away from your library?
Yeah, one of my favorite quotes that I learned in library school was that you aren't doing your job correctly if you don't have books you disagree with in your collection.
Absolutely.
I was going to make a lighthearted thing. I always feel like Twilight is the book that I'm like, why is this here? But I know people love it. So mm-hmm. you know what? It's popular. It gets chucked out still. It's going to be on the shelf.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's your yeah. 3 1/4 Twilight books. Fourth one lost me.
Oh,
I mean, that's fair.
But think of all the teenagers who read those and were like, vampires are really cool, and then got into good vampire stuff, speaking from experience.
Or that's other true. Trashy vampire stuff.
Yeah.
Also speaking from personal experience.
I guess it's because I started out with like Anne Rice. So like, mm-hmm. you know, if you don't know, Anne Rice wrote, a very beautiful vampire series. So and then I tried to read Twilight and I just couldn't. And then every film I fell asleep. So I don't know. It just wasn't my jam.
The first one is very fun, mm-hmm. only because you can tell like that was made by a woman thinking about teenage girls. Like mm-hmm. it's yeah. very fun, very campy. And mm-hmm. then they kind of went downhill because they were like, no more female directors. But that's a personal opinion. Oh. So I think the first one's real fun. That nothing yeah. beats that fun like yeah. baseball yeah. scene.
The thing that gets me about that movie is that there's so many good actors in it. Like Kristen Stewart and Robert Pattinson are actually pretty good actors when you give them, you know, decent scripts to work from.
Anna Kendrick was in it too. Uh-huh. I think she's really good, but
yeah. that script was so bad. Oh goodness. Anyway. Fun yeah. tangents aside. Yeah.
That's the book I think of when people talk about, well, you know, like what book would, you know, I guess people get confused with like misinformation, disinformation, mm-hmm. or like old information. And they're like, well, you don't have that book. Well, yeah, it's outdated and there's new research and this, mm-hmm. that, and the other thing. That's why we have these books instead of that book. And that's not censorship, mm-hmm. you know?
For sure.
Yeah.
So coming back into slightly more focus.
All right. Wow.
We struggle with that sometimes.
We're fine.
So you mentioned the ULA conference is coming up.
Yeah.
This year is a very special year because it's not just the ULA conference. It's also the MPLA conference. Can you talk to us a little about... I can yeah. speak. A little bit about what MPLA is and what this conference looks like, how it came to be.
For sure. Yeah. So the conference is coming up May 8th through the 10th, just a couple months away. Registration is open now for anyone that would like to attend. Yes. Early bird registration. And so MPLA, so that's the Mountain Plains Library Association. And so that's a regional association of libraries. I think it's either 12 or 13 states are involved in MPLA. And so it's kind of some of our neighboring states, Nevada, Arizona, Wyoming, they're part of it. And it stretches out to the Dakotas and Oklahoma out that way. And so it's a bigger conference. So there's usually an additional 100 people that attend from neighboring states. So that means we've got more options for presenters. We've got more people involved. And I think it's just a really cool opportunity this year in particular to see some things that you don't normally get to see, right? We've got a lot easier access to our local Utah librarians than we do to some of these other places around the country. So that's really exciting because it's a little bit bigger conference. We were able to use a little bit bigger venue this time. We're going to be at the Salt Palace. So we're going to be right in downtown Salt Lake City, which I'm looking forward to. I'm a Salt Lake City kid, born and raised. So it's fun for me to be able to do it here in the city and show it off to librarians from around the state and from other states as well.
Is MPLA, they're not every year, right? They do every couple of years, or are they annual as well?
So MPLA, they rotate through all of their different member states. So it only comes to Utah about once every 12, 13 years, and it's been a little bit longer. This was actually supposed to happen back 2 years ago, which got canceled because of the pandemic. 3 years ago? That was 21. Yeah.
Yeah.
2021.
That year was a wash.
I'll just take a mulligan on that year, right?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
What is time?
Yeah. Oh, yes. This question. We hear you love birds.
True.
Are they your inspiration for the theme for the conference this year? Just winging it?
Yeah. Well, thank you for mentioning the theme. Yeah. I was just like, oh, man, as you're asking the question, I didn't even mention my theme yet. Just winging it. So there's a lot of things going on there. I knew I wanted to do some sort of bird related pun because, like you said, I love birds. So I have two parakeets at home, budgies, that are very important to me. I spent the day just watching YouTube videos with them. Actually, that's what I was doing before I came here. So I love my birds. I'm also into bird watching. I always feel like when I say that, like people have like these really high expectations that I know a lot about it. I'm a pretty, I was going to say pretty casual bird watcher, but I went to Australia this last year to go see birds. So maybe I'm not that casual. Maybe more just don't know very well what I'm doing and just have a fun time with it. I've always seen it as kind of like a scavenger hunt to do while you're out walking around in nature, which I enjoy anyway, but it just kind of adds like another layer of like, oh, let's try and figure out what that bird is. So there's all the, I love birds is kind of the takeaway there. But I thought just winging it, it really captured the spirit that I wanted to convey with this conference. I think a lot of us coming out of the pandemic, we felt like, I should speak for myself. I felt like trying to go back to my job, like I had forgotten a lot of things. I had to kind of like figure it out again, you know, even though I'd done it for a long time, I felt like I was winging it every day. I feel like libraries in general do a really good job of just winging it, right? Mm-hmm. You never know what's going to happen. I've always said, you know, anything that can happen in Salt Lake City does happen at a library, both good and bad, right? You got to be ready for anything and anyone to come through your doors. Mm-hmm. So I think that's like I wanted to celebrate that a little bit. You know, I think there's often this idea of winging it is a bad thing. When you're winging it, you're unprepared, you're not ready. And I wanted to get to this idea of like, no, that's like actually a good thing. That's a thing to celebrate about us, that we do such a good job of winging it. And, you know, I think it can be stressful winging it. And so helping people come up with some strategies to be adaptable. So that's really an important part of winging it to me. It also kind of rolls into like a little bit of a feeling of imposter syndrome that I think a lot of people in our profession feel. I know I certainly felt that when I was elected president of the Utah Library Association. There was a little bit of a moment of like, whoa, what, really? Me? I'm the one? I'm the one that's going to do this thing? Okay. You know, it sounds like a couple people in this room had that experience when they were elected as round table chairs as well, right? I think it's a relatable feeling. So I wanted to kind of dig into that a little bit. So one of my keynote speakers that I'm going to have, Cy Montgomery, I don't know if any of you are familiar with her book, she writes about the natural world. So her best known book, it was a National Book Award finalist. It's called The Soul of an Octopus. And it was just like her learning about octopuses. And I had just read a book by her, something about hawks. I forget the title now I'm on here. Yeah, I'm sure there's lots of librarians. You can look it up. Cy Montgomery, something about hawks. It'll come up. But it talked a lot about how hawks are these creatures of pure instinct. And that really like clicked with me as I was thinking about a conference theme. And she really celebrated that. Like that's an important part of like a hawk's survival, that they've kind of just got these things like hardwired into their brain and they just go with it. And so I like that element of just winging it as well, right? There's some things that you just learn through experience that just kind of become instinctual and you just do them. And rather than fighting against that, you're really using that as like an asset, taking advantage of that. I probably went deeper into just winging it than you thought we were going.
No,
so
I
thanks
love
for
it.
Indulging
no,
me.
No, this is great. Yeah. Because I'm not that our audience can see, but I'm just like nodding like, yes, yes, exactly. I mean, we talk about it mm-hmm. all the time that in this profession, you have to be adaptable. Mm-hmm. Like you won't survive. You will burn out if you're not. Mm-hmm. Even as like a system, you have to adapt to changes in community and technology and all sorts, any kind of like pandemic or economic, mm-hmm. you know, rundown. Like we have to be adaptable.
Well, I said, you know, kind of coming back to my job after the pandemic, it, you know, it felt like I had to relearn it. And I think part of that is like we really did have to relearn it. I think there were some kind of fundamental changes that we all saw in libraries after the pandemic. And it was kind of a moment where we all had to reinvent ourselves and do things a little bit differently. We had to adapt.
Right? Yeah.
It also goes to that joke that you hear a lot in libraries where like, oh, they didn't teach me this in library school. Like there's just a lot of things you don't find out till you're like in there. So I think like having those skills and being like, I'll figure it out. Like I'm going to wean it. I'm going to do a great job is important.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know we always talk about like it's one of those jobs where there's always a safety net.
Mm-hmm.
Like if no one loses a limb and you didn't burn the building down, it was a good day, right?
Yeah. Oh,
like,
yeah.
Yes, we raised the bar high on that one, right? But yeah, like it.
And luckily they did teach us in library school how to learn things and find information.
Yes.
So when we run into those situations where we're like, we can go find answers and figure it out.
There's probably a book for that.
Yes.
That's a good point. That's probably part of why I think librarians are good at being adaptable, right? Like I think it is a very learning oriented profession just because, you know, that's our skill set. That's what I know how to do is find books about stuff. So I'm going to use that.
It transfers well into real life. Like if your friend's like, I need information about this person I'm dating, you can be like, oh, cool. Give me 10 seconds and I will tell you everything about them. You get very good at that.
You're not supposed to tell people we know how to cyber stalk people.
I don't think it's cyber stalking. I think it's just finding information because some people keep certain things very open.
That's true.
But librarians are just really good at that, I feel like.
Yeah. Good at finding resources so you can find the information you need.
Yeah. That's right.
So before we finish up, is there one thing you want library employees to know about ULA and then one thing you want like the public to know about ULA?
Sure. So I would say the one thing that I want everyone to know, library employees to know about ULA is it's really such a great opportunity to meet people and work with people that you wouldn't meet any other way. By joining ULA and all the various positions I've worked in within ULA, I've met people from all across the state. And it's made me a much better librarian knowing them. It's helped me so much troubleshooting different problems that have come up, you know, different things I needed to solve as I'm trying to be adaptable, as I'm winging it day to day. So I think it's just really a great opportunity. And it's just these possibilities that you wouldn't get any other way. For just general members of the public, the Utah Library Association, we are working really hard to try and influence legislation positively. It's a struggle right now. There's a lot going on where it seems like libraries are kind of in the crosshairs right now. But, you know, by reaching out to ULA, by, you know, becoming one of our supporting members, this new membership that we're rolling out, or just by signing up to get on our email lists, it's a way that we can kind of activate people around the state to contact their legislators when a bill comes up that we need some help trying to influence them, make sure that doesn't come around. We found there's a lot of these pro-censorship groups are very well organized and they're very loud. So even though the vast majority of people in the state of Utah aren't interested in having books removed from their library, they aren't interested in having books banned or censored. That's what's happening just because we haven't been able to activate voices around it. So that's something that we're really pushing for going into this next year. We've got a coalition going called Let Utah Read. They've got a website. You can Google that, Let Utah Read, and you can sign up. Right now, we've got a petition out to the governor asking him to veto House Bill 29, which is the one that I mentioned earlier that's going to make it so that if a book is pulled from three different school districts, libraries, it's going to be banned at all the schools across the state of Utah. So that's something we're working on right now. We'd like to change that. We'd like to, you know, keep this environment where all Utahns can read whatever it is that they're interested in.
We've got one last question.
Oh, all right.
This is the best one.
Okay.
It's our potato segment.
Yay!
We're slightly obsessed with potatoes.
Okay.
It may come up a lot on the podcast. Mm-hmm. Now it definitely does because we've made this potato segment for everybody.
Yeah.
I'm on the edge of my seat. What are we going to do with potatoes?
So we want to know, what is your favorite way to enjoy potatoes?
There's so many good ways to enjoy potatoes. You know, I really like a scalloped potato. Mm-hmm. Delicious. I love mashed potatoes, particularly with cheese melted on them. But I think my number one is going to be French fries.
It's a classic.
They're great. Like, I love French fries, you know, like with fry sauce or without. They're great. Do we have other fry fans here in this room? We
got
some
like
other
fries.
Supporters
yes,
of fries.
Yes.
Where are the best French fries in Utah? I have an opinion about this, but I'm going to wait because I don't want to influence you. Best French fries.
I mean, the best French fries are the ones that I make at home in my kitchen, but I don't make them very often because I'm lazy.
Okay. What's your style? What
makes
a fry
thinner
good for
fries
you?
With a nice crisp outside. Mm-hmm. If I don't make them myself, so these aren't technically French fries, they're frites.
Okay.
But Bruges makes super good frites, and they are so crispy. They're double fried, which is why they're frites and not fries.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But they're so delicious. I could eat them forever and then get sick because it's way too much fry.
I need to make a list of places because I don't know. I haven't had any French fries like out and about that have stuck with me.
Mm.
So I'm going to make a list of every place you guys tell me.
I really like Sweet Hazel. I'm vegan, so like it's harder for me to go to certain places. But Sweet Hazel has the best like crispy fries. They're so good. Even if you like take them home, they're good like later cold. They're like taste well heated up, which is hard to do, I feel like, with French fries and just potatoes in general. So Sweet Hazel has my vote. They are delicious.
Awesome. So my choice, I like some of our local Utah Greek hamburger chains. So I think Crown Burger for their sweet potato fries, best sweet potato fries around. And I feel like this is probably a somewhat controversial opinion, but Apollo Burger, truly great French fries. Like, I like my fries to be kind of crispy on the outside, but like a thick enough, substantial enough that they can still be kind of like smooth and creamy in the center. And Apollo Burger does that really well.
Nice.
I don't know if I've actually ever tried Apollo Burger's fries. I might have to go try them now.
So everyone's homework after this is to go and get French fries.
Go get some fries. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for coming and talking to us today. We really appreciate it.
Gosh, now I just want to talk about potatoes.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm sold on this segment.
Convert everyone to potatoes. It's not a hard sell.
No,
potatoes are delicious.
I don't think we've had anybody yet, if I can recall, that it's like, I don't like potatoes.
Not yet.
Yeah,
no,
I don't think so.
No. Although we had one episode where everyone was like, funeral potatoes. And I was like,
it's
really?
True. Yeah.
I love funeral potatoes. That in my top five potato preparations for sure.
They are delicious. Thank you, everyone, for listening. We enjoy having you here, even though we don't see you. If you would like to listen to more of this podcast, you can find new and old episodes wherever you listen to podcasts. We're everywhere. And we would love to hear from you. You can email us at shelvespodcast@slcolibrary.org. We love questions. We love comments. Mm-hmm. We love people telling us things. Mm-hmm.
Tell us what your favorite way to enjoy a potato is. We'll share it.
That's right. And please join us next month. We'll have another fun discussion, this time about library school and what it takes to become a librarian.
No, I'm just kidding.
All the things you didn't know you wanted to know. Our guest will be Emily Bullo, who's our library education program manager for the county library. She's
also
really
a
cool.
ULA member at large.
Hey! Yeah, no, she's awesome. We're excited to talk to her. And that's the episode.
All right.
Thanks for joining us, guys.
Until next time.
See you later.
Bye. Bye.